heightened Chase Sapphire preferred offer and an ultimate reward deep dive on today's Malinomics Squared podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon.
And I'm Robert Dwyer.
And this is the Malinomics Squared podcast, no annual fee edition.
If you're not subscribed to the full Malinomics Squared podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into topics like the following. One big topic today. We're going to talk all about Chase. And the reason this kicked off is because they heightened the offer on the Chase Sapphire Preferred. If you at all look at this space, you have probably seen in your feed, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere, Sapphire Preferred 100,000 point offer. It is really good. We're going to talk about it today from a lot of different angles. But just to get started, are you seeing that offer all over the place as well? Or is it, you know, just my feed?
It's real and it's spectacular, as we would say, Robert. I am seeing it. And, you know, even to the point where I had a person in real life that I never talked to about this say, hey, I'm interested in this card. Do you have a referral link? And I was like, yes, I do. That's so random. So the market penetration of Chase and specifically their Sapphire cards, I'm going to claim here on the show without a lot of evidence, is the highest of anyone in this game. Any issuer, any specific card type. I think it's the best known card in the game. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think with good reason. It kind of hovers around 60,000 points normally. It's up to 100,000 now. And there's something magic about the kind of 100,000-ish number that I think should get people's attention. And I think having this on the no annual fee feed is good because there are people who aren't so hardcore into this are, in a sense, better positioned for this than people who use this as a one of their primary hobbies, you know, chasing after points and miles. Because of the restrictions in getting the card, and I think the ease in acquiring and using these points, and again, we'll get into that more, but it's one of those things where, you know, we really are, I hope, talking to the right crowd, because if you're churning cards regularly, you can't get this card because of Chase's 524 rule. We'll talk about that more, right? Yeah. So I think it's good to have on the free feed here, and I do think it is a good offer, and hopefully that sets the table well for people to discuss here.
I like it, Robert. I mean, the 100,000 point offer, we kind of teased it here. We've got a link in the show notes. It's 100,000 ultimate rewards for 5,000 in minimum spend, and you've got 3 months to do that spend. There's a $95 annual fee not waived the first year. I think that can be a hurdle for some people. I think people think like, I'm not going to pay an annual fee for a card. So maybe that's like the first thing that I want to attack. It's just a square deal. You spend 5,000, you end up with something like 105,000 points. And that is worth, we'll talk more about it, that's worth a minimum of $1,000 plus. So you're trading $95 plus the spend. And again, we don't want to go out there and buy $5,000 worth of frivolous things. But, you know, I know I'm going to spend this. Let's get something back for it. That's like a 20% return on that spend. Fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think that $5,000 over 3 months is too much for a typical, you know, American household. You get into some of these Amex offers and they're $20,000 in 3 months for a business. And they just come with a lot of complications. And the annual fee, I'm glad you called that out at $95. It's not free, but if you're getting $1,000 back, you can pretty much cover the $95 annual fee very well. Chase ran an offer like this, very similar, 5 years ago on the reserve for $100,000. And that took more convincing at a $550 annual fee. So at $95, it actually is pretty low involvement. And I think that's why we like it for just like one card to see whether this game is for you at all. I mean, if you spend not a lot on credit cards and after 3 months, you've only spent $1,000 for some reason, you'd realize that this credit card churning life is not for you. So I think, though, they've kind of threaded the needle really well here. $5,000, everybody should be able to achieve that. 3 months, and we'll get in more ways to maximize it between multiple players in the same household and such. But yeah, I think that what we're talking about here today could roughly be on the value of, you know, $2,000 in cash, more than that, maybe $2,500 towards travel, or even more than that if you're effective in redeeming those points. So I think it's one of those cases where there's a really solid floor for putting a little bit of effort in here. And it could really pave the way for, you know, international premium cabin travel for two people, maybe even three or four, if you're really careful about it.
To everything you just said, we could do an entire show, Robert, because there's someone who's just, I don't even want to travel. I don't even travel. And this is still a great card where you do the spend, you get the points, you cash them out and get cash to do whatever you want with. So it's a travel show or a travel podcast, but this isn't necessarily something that you have to say, oh, well, I need to do premium travel, premium international travel. Like, it's everything from, I just want to take the cash to that and in between. And I think that is where Chase really excels. You know, you called out Amex on the high minimum spend, but they're also very high involvement couponing, high annual fees on those cards. So this is a great intro to the game that we play and a great card for someone to get or for someone to get and then do the following, which is the referral angle. Have you referred anyone on this yet?
Yeah, I have. Like I said, this is one that's just great for friends and family in real life. Like you, people are coming to you and asking what you think about this. And some of the questions that people ask are really good ones that I hadn't considered before. You know, if I'm an authorized user, can I get the welcome bonus for it? You know, really, I can refer a friend who already has Chase cards? That doesn't make any sense. Like, they have the card already. Can they get another one? Lots of questions like that come up. So there's a lot of different paths you can go down here depending on your situation. But yeah, if we generalize it and talk about the referrals, it's nice to kick the whole thing off with a referral between one or two people, because why not? You know, you get 10,000 points for each approval. And you refer, click a link, go to chase.com/refer a friend to start the party if you already have one and you want to refer somebody else. Or you could even refer player two, your spouse, which is really nice. Or, you know, anyone in the household. You can commingle points between everybody in the household, which is very nice with Chase and something you can't necessarily do so easily with Amex.
Very true, Robert. I'm reminded, though, I just filed the taxes and Chase sent me a nice 1099 for all my referrals. Is that going to pause you at all?
No.
Or are you going to continue?
No.
Same, I know. You know, it's still a net gain and it's a net positive. The referral link here is in the show notes. Are you eligible if you've had a bonus on this card in the past? What's the prevailing wisdom there?
Prevailing wisdom, I think the terms are, and it's nice that Chase won't approve you for a card if you're not eligible for the welcome bonus. Well, it's nice in a sense.
Is that nice? I don't know, Robert.
Sometimes you would want to get a card even if you can. It's not nice in that regard. But if you're unsure, they're not going to approve you and say, oh, we approved you and you put $5,000 spend on it. You're not eligible for the welcome bonus, though. So it's good in that regard. But the rule is that you are eligible for the welcome bonus for a Sapphire card. And when we say Sapphire, there's two flavors of it, the preferred and the reserve. The preferred is the $95 annual fee one. The reserve is the $550 annual fee one. You're eligible for the welcome bonus here. Well, you could get the welcome bonus for either, but we're talking primarily about the preferred because, ironically, the lower fee card currently has a higher welcome bonus of $100,000. The reserve is still at $60,000 for some reason, which makes it seem like an inferior card, but it's more expensive and it's questionable how it's better when the welcome bonus isn't as good. It's better. It's got some better perks, better travel-related perks. But anyway, yeah, if you haven't gotten a welcome bonus for either of the Sapphire cards in the past 48 months, then you're eligible to get it again. That's rule number one.
Maybe even rule number one in practice, Robert, is this 524 rule. This is because it's you cannot be approved if you've had more than five credit cards opened in the last 24 months. That's where the 5 and the 24 come from. This was put in place as kind of like an anti-churning restriction. Chase was thinking we want a book of business that's maybe more normal. You know, how many people are applying for five or more credit cards in 2 years? I guess they looked at the numbers and they said, well, that's a line in the sand where we're going to capture real people and not approve cards for people that are just playing this credit card game that we talk about a lot. So that 524 rule applies here, and it's in combination with that 48 months that you just discussed. So we're starting to put together a little bit of a chessboard here where if you are under 524, but you have had this card in the last 48 months, you still can't apply. There are some other restrictions here. You want to cover the last one?
Yeah, you can't get approved for a Sapphire Preferred if you currently have a Sapphire Preferred or a Sapphire Reserve. You have a Sapphire already, you can't get another. You can carry multiple Sapphires at a time. You could do that by maybe upgrading one at some point. But if you currently have one of the Sapphire cards, you cannot get another. So that is a common situation as well. Somebody might, you know, kind of still have a Sapphire Reserve from 5 years ago, which is exactly what Chase would have loved you to do by getting the 100,000 point welcome bonus 5 years ago and keeping it out of some, you know, old wives' tale that it's a bad idea to ever close a credit card or something like that, or they didn't downgrade it just out of inertia. But yeah, so you get a lot of people who either have a Sapphire Preferred that they downgraded from a reserve to reduce the annual fee, and now they're looking to get the welcome bonus again. They're unsure what to do. So that the I think the prevailing wisdom, and I would support that, is to downgrade that card to a Freedom, no annual fee card, and then wait maybe 2 to 4 weeks, and then you'll probably be able to get approved for a new preferred card. So that's the third kind of chess move that I think a lot of people need to make if they have a Sapphire card currently. And there's benefits to downgrading to a Freedom and carry both a Freedom and a Sapphire, maybe get that a little bit later in terms of the earning strategy, because these Sapphire cards aren't the world's aren't the best chase cards in the world to earn on. Ironically, they're good to have because they open up a lot of transferability to other partners and uplift when booking through the travel partner that I think we'll get into next here. But those are the big churning restrictions I can think of. And, you know, aside from all that, you might be under 524, never have had a Sapphire card, and get denied for whatever reason. You might not have a long enough credit history. You might have a bad relationship with Chase. There's a billion different ways you might not get approved, but these are the most common ones.
Yeah, it doesn't guarantee an approval just because you don't have any of these disqualifying situations happening here. Yeah, I like the overview there, Robert. I think that it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to hold this card long term, which is strange. And I'm wondering, do you have one of these?
I do. I do keep a Sapphire Preferred open all the time. And I think it's just because I like that transferability. I might be able to get it through some other card that I have, but I think it's just a garden variety, everyday, good enough card. Doesn't get declined for random reasons. You know, has a higher credit line typically than a Freedom. It is the card that I've put a lot of my spend on when I don't want to think about it anymore. When I want to have one place that I'm just monitoring transactions come through. I don't think it's worth, you know, categorically optimizing, you know, putting a card in your spouse's wallet for gas and groceries and warehouse clubs and all this stuff. I just have used it in the past for that purpose. And something to watch out for if you have a reserve. An additional user has a $75 fee that you can't dodge. So I think the Sapphire Preferred can defend its $95 annual fee if you're using it as part of the entire Chase ecosystem, you know, earning at 5x on other cards and then using this as a way to maybe transfer to some of their lucrative partners.
Yeah, rental car. I mean, I use it for my rental cars and I do hold one as well. And I think that that's not true on my Player 2 side. I do think, actually, we might be able to do a live application on this show at the end, Robert, because I'm running through these three restrictions we just covered, and I don't think Player 2 is going to get snared up in any of those. And that could mean she's still not approved, but maybe we'll end the show with that, yeah?
That sounds like a thing to stick around for. I can't wait to see.
Yeah, that rolls right into this two-player mode. And so if neither person has a Sapphire, you'd really want to do the following. This is one person gets a Sapphire approved through either the direct link that's here in the show notes or a referral from someone that you want to give that referral to. And then once you are approved and you have the last four digits of the card number, you can go to that refer a friend link and you can generate your own referral. And household referrals seem to be fine with Chase. And so you can refer your player too, and hopefully they can get approved as well. And once you're approved and you both hit the spend, now you got double the spend, you got double the annual fees, but then you get double the sign-up bonus as well. You probably end up with somewhere around, I think we have here in the show notes, 210,000 ultimate rewards. I'd say the spend has to happen as well, Robert. Let me do the math. That's 200 plus 10 for the referral plus another 10, 220,000 ultimate reward points just from those two cards, the minimum spend and the referral. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Yeah, no, and that's where the question sometimes comes in. Like, oh, I already have the card as an authorized user. Can I get it again myself?
Right.
And it's totally fine to do that. If you're an authorized user, no problem. You can get your own. So a lot of people, you know, one person manages the credit card applications and such. So, you know, you're kind of managing the referral and the application and, you know, considering household income as the qualifying thing to pay off cards and stuff like that. It gets a little tricky, but when you learn how to do something one time, having a partner to be able to do it a second time with is really beneficial in this game.
Yeah, batch it up. I think everything's easier the second time around. That's true.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, good record keeping is always important. And as you get more of these cards, you really want to keep track of things. So let's talk about these points. You know, we end up 220,000 points. What's that even mean, Robert? What's a point?
A point. What is a point? You know, I think I like explaining. I get a lot of less follow-on questions, a lot fewer follow-on questions when I refer somebody for a Chase card and they come back and either don't ask about it or ask how to use them. With Chase, it's more like, hey, you know, how do I get another one? Or how do I use these points most effectively? With Amex, it's like, oh, I'm having such a hard time booking these with airfare. What, this person didn't do that? Or, you know, can't I just cash these out? And it's like, well, you can, but they're not very good value. And I think Chase does a really nice job of establishing a really simple and nice floor. I was helping a friend, you know, book with points through the Amex portal. And then I said, you know, you're seeing an inflated price here with Amex travel. When it comes to Chase, you know, you know you can just cash these out for a penny a piece. You know, just click and the pennies show up in your account. They're like, wow, that's so cool. That's $2,500 cash. I don't have to mess around with that portal anymore. This is really nice. So yes, at minimum, they're worth a penny a piece, which is, you know, a lot of cards are like that, but not all of them, especially Amex. So that's one thing I really like about Chase.
I agree. And I think that it's not an Amex show, but the difference between trying to get value and get use of membership rewards versus ultimate rewards, it is night and day. You know, you cannot pool points with membership rewards. You cannot transfer points with membership rewards to another card member. And so I think the complexity with ultimate rewards is that it, like an analysis paralysis type thing. You could just cash them out, but you also could use them to book travel in the portal. And the portal is pretty standard. I think most credit card issuers have partnered up with someone. The portal has flights, hotels, activities, rental cars. Right out the gate, I'll say, do not rent a rental car.
No.
Because I don't think the rental car coverage on the Chase Sapphire Preferred or Reserve would cover you for a booking. The portal itself gives you 1.25 cents with the Sapphire Preferred and 1.5 cents with the Sapphire Reserved for travel. But is it really that? You know, let's just stop for a minute on that, Robert. I think you and I have done plenty of bank point bookings in our life, and that advertised number can be achieved, I think, in ideal situations, but in reality, it usually ends up somewhere a little lower.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems like you can almost always find a better way to book something some other way, especially hotels. But, you know, increasingly with airfare, you know, there's promo codes that sometimes are in use. And maybe just most frequently and most foundationally, the question that comes up is, should I transfer to a partner or should I book with cash out and then use that to book airfare, or should I use the travel portal? And so you always have to do that math, and then you lay on top of that the nice feature of being able to cancel award tickets without much friction at all in most cases. And you can't necessarily do that if you book through the portal. So that's another thing to think about. But then at the same time, you might get points stranded if you transfer them from Chase to, say, United or Southwest or British Airways Avios. So you can embark upon a lot of complexity and trade-off there between ease of cancellation and ease of use. But in a lot of cases, I think airfare is one of the harder things to get a discount on. You know, if you just go to Google Flights, you go to the airline's website and you compare it to what you see in the Chase Travel portal, there are plenty of cases where you'll see the exact same price. And I think the value that you're getting is, you know, that 1.25 or 1.5 that you just talked about. And you would earn miles for the flight. It's not like it's a disqualifying disposition to have booked it through the Chase portal. So it depends. I'm always looking to use it on a case where I can't find any better angle on it. But like you say, if you're a real deal hound, there almost always is a better way to book it. So it's something to keep in mind. But for simple transactions like airfare booked through the Chase portal for a flight that you take, I do think it will work out. You get a proper ticket with the airline and it's nothing strange about it.
It's not a scam.
No.
You mentioned United and orphaning miles. I want to stop on that for a second there, Robert. There are transfer partners. And so the travel portal itself is run by Chase. The points get taken out of your account and used as value towards the price of travel. That's not the same as transferring those points to a hotel or airline directly. Those then become hotel points or airline frequent flyer miles. The three that we are really going to cover are Hyatt for hotels, United and Southwest. There are other transfer partners like British Airways comes to mind, Robert. And sometimes there have been transfer bonuses for some of those as well. So the math and the complexity of this, you know, it starts out so simple, 1 cent per point cash out. And this is just, you know, layering on top of that, on top of that, on top of that. I want to go back to that person I talked to at the beginning of the show. I don't even travel. I just want the, you know, spend and the cash out. You're done. You can probably stop listening to this episode right now.
Stick around for the live application, but you're done.
come back. Yeah. You're probably the guy I know that knows the most about Hyatt. Talk to me as if I know nothing. Why would I transfer these points to Hyatt instead of just booking the Hyatt hotel?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, you could book a Hyatt hotel directly with those points through the travel portal, but why is it better to go to Hyatt? Hyatt just has an inordinately valuable cent per point on average relative to other transfer partners. Chase has always tried to keep it very simple. Most of the transfer partners are one-to-one. You'll see over other bank point situations like Amex. Like Amex has like a 250 to 200 JetBlue transfer ratio. Chase is one-to-one. What are some of the other crazy ones? I mean, there's been so many.
Choice Hotels.
Yeah, yeah, really weird ones, right? But the ability to earn, say, 5X somewhere with Chase points, transfer them to Hyatt. And then I'd say the average cent per point you get with Hyatt is around 2. If I had to just draw an approximation, and sometimes it can go much more than that. Sometimes it isn't quite as good as that. But Hyatt points are inordinately valuable, and it's been a very nice thing for a very long time that you're able to transfer one-to-one from Chase over to Hyatt. So you can transfer one-to-one to IHG, but it's the value of an IHG point isn't Marriott. Really as good. Yeah, Marriott, a great example, more closer to 0.7 cents a piece or something like that. So Hyatt points are just particularly valuable, and it's been nice that they've kept it at one-to-one for so long. So that's the upshot of it, and people love the Hyatt Globalist program with its generous breakfast benefits and upgrades and all that kind of stuff. So it all comes together really nicely. And that's why Hyatt is kind of a darling of the points and miles community, I would say.
I can't remember the last time I stayed at a Hyatt, Robert. We are so opposite. I think for anybody that doesn't listen to the show very much, we're very, very much, I think, we travel very differently. And we live on different sides of the country. Our kids are different ages. Where we like to go is a little different. Kind of the way we like to travel is a little different. And that's the beautiful part, I think, about travel is that look, you're seeing tons of use of Hyatt and getting great utility and great value out of it. That's great. It doesn't make my time with this card any less valuable. It's just different value for me. One thing I want to mention on these transfers are they are very much one way. So if I book through the travel portal, something happens and I'm able to cancel. Let's say I'm within the window of cancellation or the airline changes a flight on me and I want to cancel, I will get my ultimate rewards back. But when I transfer over to Hyatt, United, Southwest, and then something goes sideways, those points are locked there. And that's that orphaning that you mentioned. You could transfer your 220,000 ultimate rewards to United, and if there's no availability for the flight that you want or not enough seats for your family on it, you're kind of stuck and you can't go back. You really want to make sure. I just recently had a situation like that where I saw something, I went to book it, and the airline told me, oh, no, sorry, that wasn't a bookable, our mistake. And it's just something that I would say is maybe not for everyone. Would you agree?
Yeah. No, you can definitely get in trouble there. That becomes very aggravating later. You know, say you transferred over to United and then the flight options dried up there after some cancellation and then you need to book with American. You're stuck. You're not able to book with United at all. Yeah. One thing to differentiate and that people might be familiar with is a pay yourself back situation, as Chase calls it. Maybe some of the Capital One cards people might be familiar with, like a erase this purchase kind of approach to things. That doesn't really exist in the Chase ecosystem as much. They do have these pay yourself back categories that come and go and are at a certain value. So there is the notion of that. I don't use it so much. I think the travel options that we just talked about right now are good, but I think you've gotten some utility out of that on the reserve card, right?
I have. I have. I haven't recently, and I'm kind of glad I haven't because we'll talk about some like increased value from these points. But, I think that rose during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. People were holding these high annual fee cards and saying like, look, I'm not traveling. What am I going to do? I'm just going to cancel this card. And so pay yourself back became an option. I just don't see the ability to erase enough quickly enough in the categories that they're bonusing for me. In fact, in the past, even with pay yourself back, I used to just take the full 1 cent cash out because it's just so much easier. Mm-hmm. And, less headache and less, what am I going to spend a couple hundred dollars a month and over the course of 10 months get all of that cashed out? So it is there. And for someone, maybe it is an opportunity to get extra value. And so I think it's important we mention it. But we teased this a little earlier about the earning strategy, and we've talked really quickly about it as well. You mentioned this 5X earning and then, spending the points with Uplift on the Chase Sapphire Reserve. What we're really talking about is, and I don't want to overstate this, Robert, these cards kind of stink for spending on.
Yeah. Would you agree? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of indefensible that I put a majority of my real life spend on it, but the theory is that real life spend doesn't move the needle and that
that's it. Yes.
You're looking to commingle a stable of cards that you can earn 5X at a lot of places.
Yeah, the stable of cards with Chase, I think, is really important. If you're new to Chase, this is probably the beginning of a multi-year, multi-card, multi-headache opportunity with Chase and putting together really a stable of these cards that earn well. And when we say earn well, we mean earn more than the 1 or 2 or 3X. Really, the majority of what you earn on these Chase Sapphire cards is going to earn one ultimate reward per dollar. And if you think about that, if you're getting 1 cent per point, that's 1% back on your spend. None of this moves the needle. 1%, 2%, 3%, even 5%, Robert, you could probably do better. We've talked about this a long time ago with cash because there's an overspend situation that happens on credit cards. But there are cards with Chase that earn 5X. The Freedom, for example. You can downgrade after the year on this Chase Sapphire Reserve to a Freedom that earns 5X in special categories throughout the year. In fact, I think there's a calculator somewhere on Milenomics, the blog, that will show you the break-even point for spend in a year on Chase Freedoms versus Chase Sapphires. And so the main point is that Chase Freedoms have a very small cap on what you can spend. It's about $1,500 per quarter times 4 quarters a year. So something like $6,000 in spend at 5X would earn you 30,000 ultimate rewards. 6,000 in spend over 12 months on this Chase Sapphire would earn you 6,000 points. So there are categories that we need to care about there. And so the complexity just becomes higher and higher and higher. But then you can add in these Inc. cards, Chase business cards, if you have a business that also earn 5X in other really interesting categories. And then you start playing the game we're playing, Robert. I mean, all of this ends with you in the basement for hours, your spouse saying, what are you doing? And you feeling like you just came upon this like unbelievable opportunity and you fall down a rabbit hole. Or you go, wow, this is not for me, right? I mean, I think that's the two options.
Yeah, like a classic in between is we're going to do all of our spend via gift cards that I can buy at Staples because that's a qualifying 5X category on the Chase Inc. card. So anybody wants anything, we can order some of them online and then we're going to go in store, we're going to buy them. When they have $200 gift cards on sale with no fees, then we're going to use that to do all of our spend and we're going to juggle this increasingly complicated world of credit cards and gift cards. And that's where you really get into a miserable part of the game. But the quarterly category this quarter with Chase Freedom is Amazon. And everyone knows how to spend stuff on Amazon. It's super easy. A lot of people spend a ton of money there. Maybe it qualifies as your Whole Foods groceries. Maybe it's just stuff around the house. And so it's capped at 1500, but it generates points a heck of a lot faster than putting that spend on a Sapphire card, for example.
Yeah, I agree. And the second part of this, you earn at 5X on those other cards. And we talked earlier about being able to move these ultimate rewards around. Each card has its own pool of ultimate rewards. That is different than some other banks where things can pool together into one mega pool or one giant batch of membership rewards, for example. Each card has its points. You can transfer between those cards. When those points land on that other card's pool, they retain the value that that card has. So a long way of explaining, like you'd earn on a Freedom and you transfer those 30,000 points over to your Chase Sapphire. You'd need two cards open with Chase. You need two of these to do this, a Freedom and a Sapphire. But once you transfer them to the Sapphire Preferred, for example, you'd have that 1.25 cent uplift in the portal, the transferability we're talking about to Hyatt, United, and others. And so here in the show notes, we've just got some loose math here. You know, 5X at 1.25 cents is 6.25 cents. 5X at 1.5 cents, if you were to go on to a Sapphire Reserve, is 7.5 cents per point. I can tolerate quite a bit of cost to earn those points if I'm earning and then getting uplift on top of that. So a multiplier on the earn and a multiplier on the uplift. And we haven't even gotten into like the mega uplift that's going on right now with Chase. But all of this is to say, if your eyes have glazed over in the last 15 minutes of this podcast, there's a lot of math. And it might not be for you if you can't do that math kind of quickly in your head.
No, it's a crazy world. I mean, how many Chase cards do you have open right now when you log into your account?
I have, you're counting business?
Yeah.
Oh man, Robert, you put me on the spot. You're making me feel bad.
If you're having a hard time counting, it's probably more than most people, right?
I have 5 personal cards and I have 3 business cards. I have 8 Chase cards.
Yeah. I'm in very similar ballpark, right? And so there's not a hard limit on how many cards you can have. And that's really what they've incented us to do if you want to optimize the situation with Chase, is to have a lot of the cards. And a lot of the Freedoms might be around with a very low limit because you're just looking to get that 5X out of them, but they're totally okay with that. So in a sense, if you like it, it can lead to something that almost never ends with Chase until they say it ends.
The madness, yeah, really, right? The madness. And I do think that there are other cards. There's a whole other ecosystem in Chase. The Sapphires are great. The Freedoms tie into the ultimate reward lifestyle. But Chase has a very tight link with Southwest and United for cards that earn directly with United and Southwest. And I do think there's a high opportunity cost on those cards. We're talking about the Sapphires as a vehicle to cash out ultimate rewards earned across many cards. And you can earn them and then use them for travel, cash back, pay yourself back, transfer to hotel or airline partners for different kinds of travel, you end up with these Southwest or United cards, you're very locked into that ecosystem. We've seen some changes with Southwest recently that really incentivize having a Southwest card. I mean, the loss of free bags is only real if you don't hold a Southwest credit card, which is true of almost every other airline. And Robert, I don't know about you, but for me, I don't mind paying for a bag every once in a while. It's not a big deal to me. I don't let the cost of a luggage dictate all the rest of my yearly spend and credit card strategy. And I think that that's an important thing to call out here.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as you were talking there. The United cards could be one as well, right? Say you live near Newark Airport, live near San Francisco, and that's your preferred carrier, whatever it is. Is it worth tying up one of your slots to carry that card perpetually, because the free bags really does make a big difference for you, or some other perk about some of those cards? I think maybe a strategy could be, right, if you always want to carry a Southwest card for the rest of your life, is to get that one first and then pile on all the ultimate reward earning cards on top of that. Maybe it goes together that way better. It would be unfortunate if somebody, you know, was blocked themselves out from getting the co-branded card that makes sense for them because they piled on with too many ultimate rewards. But it is worth thinking about in realistic terms whether you could do just as well for the amount that you fly and paying for those bags another way, not checking bags, whatever it might be. Everyone's situation is different. But, I could see somebody who, we talked about the co-branded paradox before, and how, you know, you think that if you go to Disney a lot, you should get the Disney credit card. You probably shouldn't get the Disney card as a reason to carry it, yeah, right? It's almost like a vanity project. You'd probably be better off, 90% of us, I think, rough term coming off the top of my head, 80%, 90%, you'd be better off just developing a big cache of points that can be used for travel rather than wrapping your lifestyle around earning points that are earmarked for one specific program. So something to think about that. We could probably go a lot more into it, but I think our position on it is to be more flexible, not be loyal and tied into one airline. But if you're captive to a certain airline, maybe it is worth considering. So no one-size-fits-all solution out there.
No companion pass in your future, Robert?
I have flown Japan Airlines 6 times more than I have Southwest in the past 5 years. So no Southwest companion pass in my life.
I love it. Robert, what's going on with this heightened point offer, the mega point offer?
I don't know if we're the only two people out there targeted for it, but it's
like
the strangest thing.
I really do.
We can't get any other data points on this, so we're calling out here on the show. Maybe some people, if they get the card, they can tell if they're targeted. Strangest thing, and one of the best offers that we have seen, the doctor of credit posted and said, hey, there's some uplift there. Some commenters told me about this. And I poked at it in the morning, you know, waking up on the East Coast shift for the Milanomic staff here. I checked, and I was getting uplift more than we were just talking about with the Sapphire Preferred. I had 1.5 cents a piece of uplift with the Sapphire Preferred when it should be normally 1.25. And we're seeing people that are upgraded to as much as 1.75 cents a piece. And it's only for certain things. It's for premium cabin flights on United, Delta, and Qatar, strangely, and some hotels. I was saying nicer hotels, kind of like Amex Fine Hotels and Resorts, but I've seen some pretty mid-level hotels in there, like Courtyard Marriott in certain markets and things like that. So take a look, log in if you have a Sapphire card, preferred or reserve, and do a sample calculation. Just book a flight from Boston to San Francisco on a Delta United premium cabin and do the math, see what uplift you're getting. I told you about this, and man, you really lucked out. What are you getting over there?
Ooh, I really did, Robert. I did. I'm on the high end of the uplift threshold. So this is only applying to bookings in the Ultimate Reward travel portal. But on my reserve, I'm seeing 2.25 cents per point for bookings of flights in, we say premium cabin, but Robert, this includes just extra space seats on United and Delta.
That's premium.
And I want to stop on that for a moment, because for some people, that feels big. I've heard people on the plane say, oh, we're in business class. And they're really in row 7 of economy. It's, you know, it's interesting how the marketing strategy of these airlines works, you know, premium economy and extra space room and including beverages, and you're 5 rows ahead of where I am. So, you know, you can have that benefit as a member of the airline frequent flyer programs, higher tier elites. So for example, American Airlines, if you're a platinum or above, you can just pick those seats anytime you book any flight or even an award flight with them. But here you can simulate that. You know, you can take a flight where it actually pays to take that extra space seat because it's being considered premium economy, and your value goes, in your case, from 1.25 cents to 1.5 cents. It's probably going to cover the upgrade from economy to more space seats on United or Delta. And it could even be a situation where it's less. In my situation with 2.25 cents per point versus 1.5, it's less for me to fly in those seats in Delta or United, which is a bizarre negative cost upgrade. And I love that. I really do. And logging in, I'm almost never targeted for great stuff. We make jokes about it all the time on the show. I was targeted for this, and I'm seeing it actually consistent for me. I'm at the high end, 2.25 on the reserve. I'm at 1.75 on the preferred. So it seems like it's tied to an individual person, but again, our data points are so small, we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I could go with that going in the other direction. I had a preferred, and I was at the low end of the uplift. I upgraded it to a reserve, and I was, again, at the low end of the uplift. Mm-hmm. But I am achieving uplift. And so you take a situation, say you're sitting on 200,000 ultimate rewards like we were talking about there, right? And there could be a situation where somebody would be better off in one household having a reserve. I mean, maybe you get up to 200,000, 500,000, million ultimate rewards. You could sure justify that $550 annual fee, I think. Race 300 of it with the travel credit that comes with that card. And if you're unlocking a lot more value and you're booking through the travel portals, your preferred way of using those points, I think you can justify the annual fee having one of those because it unleashes so much more value through the Chase portal. So it could be a significant difference worth looking at if that's the way you like to book.
Wow. I mean, the complexity, this show went from, hey, apply for this card, press a button and get some cash back to, well, if you're going to book some travel this summer, there are four different ways to do it. And potentially transferring the points to the airline is not the best way to do it. And all the way to that premium cabin international travel that we teased a little earlier, Robert, there are situations where you could do better to book that with this mega uplift through the travel portal, and it would end up being less ultimate rewards than if you transferred it out. Now, you do have a lot of other considerations. You would earn miles on that flight, and if it's a premium cabin, you would earn probably a good number of miles, but you don't have that flexible cancellation. However, you don't orphan any miles. If you do need to cancel, and there's a potential that you can cancel, you just get your ultimate rewards back. Wow, that's the whole show in like four sentences, and it took us 45 minutes to really flush those ideas out. I want to commend Chase for creating an ecosystem that for 10 years has relatively been held steady. How could you chart anything 10 years in the future, Robert, and nail it like this?
Yeah.
It's really difficult, and I think they've done it.
It's pretty wild. I'd love to see if somebody's targeted for that point offer when they're getting approved for a new card for the first time. Like you're saying, it does seem tied to the person, and I don't know what the targeting criteria was for this. We got a few data points. Was it if you had a lot of points there to begin with and looking to get some off the books? That didn't seem to be the case. I really don't know what the condition is that is getting people targeted for this, but maybe that is paving the way. I don't think you're getting an instant card number here if you do get approved. Are you ready? Are you ready for the live application?
I'm ready, Robert.
All right, so what are you going to do here? You're refer yourself from yourself to player two. She is, of course, going to get on and do this application herself. It would be wrong to apply for a credit card for somebody else, but we're going to simulate this.
Absolutely, she's right here.
She's right there, ready to click the buttons.
Well, she's got to put in her information here, right? And it's a relatively straightforward application. It needs email, it needs phone number, it needs address, it needs social security. It's going to ask for household income. Through the magic of editing, we'll make this even more streamlined, I'm sure, Robert. All right, I'm ready, Robert. I have my player two here. They have clicked agree to the statements on the terms and conditions after reading all of them, of course. We're going to click submit. Before we do that, what would you say, Robert, are the chances here? I don't know her 524 status. You know, I don't really play in the 524 universe very much. It's not something that I bend my lifestyle around. But I do tend to apply for less cards for player two. I think you're similarly in that type of softer approach for your spouse.
Yeah, yes? But she's definitely over 524. If you had to guess, would you say your player two is under 524?
I've looked at it here. She is under 524, which is interesting. So anything's possible, right?
Well, that's a really good point. Either way, right? You see people who work their whole life to get under 524, and they still get denied for a card. And you see other cases where you're over 524, and for whatever reason, the electric fence has been de-electrified, and you can sneak into the park. So who knows what might happen here?
You and I did that.
Of course.
Right? 2 years ago, we got in with...
How do you think you have to have reserve and a preferred and all this stuff?
Yeah. And we... Yeah, it's... It is, look, you never know if you don't try. And I think we're going back to that idea that, you know, you started the show saying, look, they won't approve you if you're not going to get the bonus, which in this situation is extremely nice. It makes it easy. I don't need to micromanage things. Just every once in a while when there's a heightened Chase Sapphire offer, throw an application in. What's the worst that's going to happen? A hard pull?
Hey, that's not a bad idea. That's inspiring. I could do. Hey, I think my P2 needs to apply for this card as well. But I'm going to predict that this application goes pending. Whether it ultimately gets approved or not, my guess is that it's going to go pending. And not because it's not going to get approved. I just think that Chase tends to do a lot of pendings if you have some cards and such. I think you can't get an instant approval, but more often than not, I see a pending situation right off the bat. I'm not sure which way it's going to go, but that's my prediction. What do you think?
Well, Robert, we'll find out. I'm hitting apply right now.
All right.
Thanks for applying. We're unable to approve your application. You'll receive a letter in the mail.
Ugh.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you stayed through to the end of the show, expecting something amazing. Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. That's how the game works sometimes. On to the next one.
Hey, you tried.
I did, Robert. Yeah, I did. You're right, you know?
No harm.
And what's interesting is that doesn't mean she can't get other cards with them.
That's true. You've seen some people get approved for ink cards, even though other things are not possible. So yeah, always worth trying.
Well, that kind of makes a show. Would you agree?
Yeah, you ready to wrap it up?
I am, Robert. Go for it.
Thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/mileonomics. There you'll get a special link to listen to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
As always, you can reach us on social media. I'm @Mileonomics and Robert is @Robert Dwyer. Until then, we'll see you on the site.